Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
With your host, Andrew Donaldson, this is Heard Tell.
Welcome back to Heard Tell. Thank you so much for giving us the most important thing you have, your time. So we try to do what we always do, turn down the noise of the news cycle, and good Lord, is it loud right now. Get to the information we need to properly discern the times we live in. Now, the thing is, I was actually supposed to be off this week. I was supposed to be not doing anything. I've been on the road. I've been traveling. Oldest daughter is getting married on this coming Sunday. As I'm recording this, I spent all last weekend helping them move. So I've been across four different states. I've drove hundreds and hundreds of miles. I'm up in my mom and dad's right now preparing for the wedding that will be up yonder, traditional country wedding. Those of you that have accused me of tweeting and podcasting from my mom's basement like a troll, I am literally doing this from my mom's basement. Because there's nowhere else to sleep right now. The house is full of other stuff. But there's been so much going on that we wanted to do a quick episode, a little different episode than we normally do. A lot of people have reached out and actually asked, like, what do you think of this? What do you think of the assassination attempt? What do you think of the J.D. Vance VP pick? There's been so much stuff going on, this court decisions. We just wanted to touch base real quick. It won't be a full-blown episode, but I just want to touch on a couple of things because folks have been asking, and I got a little bit of time today before things really start getting crazy in the next few days, and I haven't been online a lot, purposefully so. This is family time for me, but let's talk about a few of the things that have been going on. Let's start with the J.D. Vance pick. Because we do big boy grown folk talk here. I lay my biases on the table. I find J.D. Vance loathsome. I haven't liked him for years. That stupid hillbilly eulogy book he wrote. I don't care for the man for a lot of reasons. I find him loathsome is the word I'm going to use and stick with. I don't think there's a lot of redeeming things to him politically. I don't think there's a lot of redeeming things to him ideologically. I don't think he's much of a leader at all. I think he is going to be a political force to deal with, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. Let's start with why Trump picked him. The traditional things that people talk about with VP picks, this is one of those things where common knowledge and what people think is going on with VP picks is usually not really what it goes into. Let's go back to Trump's first VP. Mike Pence. Presidents and presidential candidates don't really pick their VPs most of the time. Usually they're told who to pick or they're massaged into who to pick. For example, remember Trump's first campaign, there was a lot of dissension. He hadn't taken over the party yet. So they were trying to meld Trump and the people he was bringing in to the traditional Republican establishment. And part of that deal was they kind of foisted Mike Pence upon Donald Trump. Donald Trump didn't want to really pick him. He's like, this is who you pick to calm down the evangelicals, although we now know that that was an unfounded claim because they love Trump. This is who you calm down the establishment with. This is how you calm down the conservative base. You're going to pick a conservative stalwart in Mike Pence. This is going to balance the ticket. It'll bring the party together. It was a traditional VP pick, and it was foisted upon Donald Trump. Now, he could have said no and picked somebody else, but good political decision. He went with the party. The party united around Trump, and he won in 2016. Now, fast forward to this pick. This pick is not that. It's a different situation. Donald Trump can pick whoever he wants, and he did. Donald Trump doesn't have to think about the usual political calculations. He's winning this election. He's not the underdog that nobody thinks is going to win. He's the favorite right now. everything that could possibly go right for Donald Trump, except for getting shot at, and we'll talk about that later on. So I don't mean the assassination attempt itself was good. That was an awful moment for everybody involved, and I'm glad he survived it. But the aftermath of it has been very good politically for Donald Trump. Everything that could go bad for Joe Biden has gone bad since the debate, and afterwards these interviews are not helping. The news coverage is not helping. If it can go wrong for Joe Biden, it's going wrong for him right now. If it can go right for Donald Trump, it's going right for Donald Trump right now. So he's in a really good position, and he's feeling confident, and he should, politically. So he picks J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance doesn't actually add anything to the ticket. J.D. Vance, running his Ohio Senate campaign, ran well behind all the other Republicans, and it was Mitch McConnell jumping into the last minute with a whole lot of money and support that got him over the line in that election. But what does J.D. Vance represent? If he wasn't foisted upon Trump and Trump got to pick who he wanted to, which he did here, why J.D. Vance? The vice presidential pick is not just an election thing or a political thing. It's a factional power thing. Things like the Republican Party has factions, and those factions fight for power. Trump's faction is the most powerful faction in the GOP right now. It's still a coalition, even though Trump dominates it. There's a spectrum of people who tolerate Trump, to the full-blown believers of Trump, to people like Vance and the Ted Cruzes of the world who converted to Trumpism because they want to be, you know, ambitious and powerful. What faction is J.D. Vance? J.D. Vance represents a very big change in the GOP. He represents, there's not a good term to override this, so I'm going to broad brush this a little bit, but kind of the tech bro, edgelord, that kind of group. Of course, everybody, you shouldn't be aware of his connections with Peter Thiel at this point. You should be aware of his connections as a venture capitalist. You should be aware that he's a very young, you know, he'll be 40 at the end of this campaign. He's not quite turned 40 yet. He's only been a senator for a very short period of time. He had not held political office before that. He did serve in the military. He did go to law school, although he never practiced at Yale. He went to Ohio State for his undergrad. And you know the hillbilly eulogy story. So his faction is this new breed. And I'm going to use this term, people going to get mad, but you go ahead and get mad. It's this new breed of the tech oligarchs that don't ideologically fit really cleanly into other parties, but they have globbed on to the remade Trump GOP because they see that into their way into government power. They are not traditionally conservative. They are not traditionally Republican. They are very much the folks like the Elon Musks of the world, the Peter Thiels of the world. And J.D. Vance fits this mold really, really well. He's one of their guys. He fits right in with them, right? They're Trumpian in mindset, the business mindset, the rule-breaking mindset, the I'm going to do what I want to do mindset. And that is what J.D. Vance is representing here. He's not really representing a populism because if you look at what he actually preaches, he's got some really mixed up ideology stuff. He's not really a Trumpian, although he completely has converted to Trumpian from it's really easy to find the stuff he said. And this is an important point to the Trump folks that actually will add to his aura because he says, look, I was wrong, but now I've converted and here's what I think about him. Where some folks will find that very hypocritical, I'm one of them, and some folks find that really cravenly politically expedient, I'm one of them, it will resonate with some of the Trump base. But again, J.D. Vance is somebody who ran well behind how Republicans were doing in the election year when he won in Ohio, which is a safely Republican state now. He was in real trouble in that race. He's very abrasive politically. He does not do well with minorities. He does not do well with women. He does not do well in the suburbs. These are all groups that the Republican Party wants to try to reach into as President Biden falters. J.D. Vance doesn't do any of that. So why do you pick him? Well, number one, he has those connections to all that venture capitalist, Silicon Valley, tech bro, edgelord clique that we're talking about. They got a lot of money and they want to spend it to get power. And Donald Trump, despite everything else that's going on, still needs a lot of money to become president. The legal stuff is not the imminent danger that it has been with some of the court rulings and that sort of things, but he still has a conviction on his record. He's still going to spend a lot of money in appeals. He needs money for this campaign. and the pipeline to the Silicon Valley tech bro billionaires that J.D. Vance represents and the David Sachs of the world represent, and now that we know Elon Musk is pumping money into this rig, that's where J.D. Vance fits in. He speaks those guys' language. He is one of them. He moves in those circles, and that is now going to be a conduit to money for the Trump campaign going forward in a potential Trump presidency. Now, that also means they're going to get a seat at the table and get a lot of influence, because that's how these things work. Let's all be adults. That's the first part of this. But the other part of it is, Trump has been unusually, at least by his standards, very, very disciplined. My friend Brady Leonard, I go on his podcast a lot. Brady and me disagree on a lot of stuff, but we talk all the time. We're friends. We don't usually talk politics. We're talking, you know, hunting, shooting, sports, things like that. We've had a good friendship. We disagree politically on a lot of things. He wrote in the Washington Examiner about the J.D. Vance pick, and I retweeted it with a comment, and I just said what I opened this up with. Look, I loathe him. I have bias towards J.D. Vance. Here's a more nuanced take from somebody more, you know, he's more Republican than I am, although he's not a Republican. He's more open to Trump than I am. And he laid out the case, and I think Brady was exactly right in his philosophy on what Trump's intending to do here. Trump is going to try to be the more unifying person. He's going to try to tone it down. He's going to be a little bit more disciplined. And you unleash J.D. Vance as the attack dog, which he's very happy to do. He did it in the wake of the assassination attempt. He said really off the wall, frankly, stuff. He's praised things like Alex Jones. J.D. Vance will say anything he thinks he needs to say, because that's who he is. He's just a craven, vapid individual that is completely obsessed and with ambition and power. So he'll do whatever. So in that respect, he's the perfect running mate for Trump. He will actually make Trump look reasonable in some ways if Trump can manage to be disciplined. Now, it's July. It's a long way to go. Do I think Donald Trump can be super disciplined all the way through? I don't know. Maybe the assassination attempt really will change him. It may. I hope it does. I hope it makes him a better person and a better leader if he becomes president again. We will see. But I think Brady's right. I think that's the plan. J.D. Vance, the attack dog. Trump, trying to stay above it, trying to change his image a little bit, just take the edges off a little bit as they try to get some of those disaffected folks. Here's the thing with Trump, too, and we'll round this off this way. Even with all the bad happening, Trump is only inching up in the polls. There's not a big swing in it. So President Biden is not getting the support he needs to win, but that support is not necessarily going to Donald Trump. It's creeped up a little bit. It's swung up a little bit. But Donald Trump really does seem to have a very hard electoral ceiling, even with Biden imploding, even with Biden having everything that could possibly go wrong for President Biden go wrong. Those voters are not running to Donald Trump. Those voters are threatening to stay home. They're threatening to go third party. They're threatening to do a protest vote. But most of them aren't going to go over to Donald Trump. Donald Trump may get a few of them if, big ifs. Chief Conley always told us more than two ifs isn't a plan, it's a prayer. But if Donald Trump can stay a little bit more disciplined, if he can show some contriteness and unity and get a little bit of the goodwill from this assassination attempt and let the J.D. Vances of the world be attack dogs without going too far, without going into rage, without going into some of the stuff that has hurt Trumpism's brand over the years, and justifiably so, then that might be a winning strategy. So that's the J.D. Vance stuff. We can talk about hillbilly eulogy some other time, but I will just remind everybody of this. The point of hillbilly eulogy was not to explain I can't say it because I'm too Appalachian. Unlike J.D. Vance, who grew up middle class an hour north of Cincinnati. Rural white voters is what people clapped onto that book, especially with the rise of Trump. J.D. Vance didn't write that about Appalachians to try to help anybody or to try to do anything. The entire point of that book was to make J.D. Vance look super awesome for having overcome those darn Appalachian people who otherwise would have kept him down. That's why we don't like him. And I'm, unlike J.D. Vance, I really am a hillbilly. I'm sitting up on top of the hill right now where my family has been for the better part of 200 years. And we got all those things that were in hillbilly eulogies. We've got people that have had issues. We have people that struggle. My parents' generation is the first generation of our family going all the way back to the old country that wasn't dirt floor poor. But That's not an excuse. You don't just run down people to make yourself look awesome. By his own admission, he wrote that book. He's told the story, J.D. Vance has, of his, you know, Yale law professor saying, well, you need to write your story so that you'll stand out. It was a brilliant political move. It was a window into the future that he understood that lore and mythology is way more important than ideology and principle when it comes to politics. He wrote a book about how awesome he is for overcoming Appalachia, and he's done absolutely nothing to help any of the problems he pointed out to get where he is now ever since, and I doubt he ever will, and I judge him harshly for it. You can gussy it up however you want to, but I just believe who J.D. Vance told me he was the first time, and I'm not going to change my mind. More Hurtel right after this.
Wayfair's Labor Day clearance is back. Score up to 70% off everything home. And end summer with can't-miss surprise flash deals. All with fast shipping right to your doorstep. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 3rd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hi, welcome back to Herd Tell. Okay, let's talk about the assassination attempt on Donald Trump. Funny enough, I was almost completely offline Saturday for a couple of reasons. We were at my daughter's house up in Virginia. We were helping her move. We were actually out at a barbecue restaurant when the news hit, and it was one of those weird things where all of a sudden everybody's on their phones. And at first, you know, people still didn't really know what was going on. The news networks were being very careful in how they called it, so... But pretty apparent what was going on pretty quickly. We were following along, and as the news started coming out, what had really happened at the Butler rally, and somebody had actually taken a shot at Donald Trump, and another person was killed, the shooter was killed, a couple people were wounded, just horrific stuff. Let's start with the obvious. I'm very glad that Donald Trump survived this assassination attempt. Some things you put away your politics. Assassinations is one of them. I have zero patience for anybody joking, making light, any of that. Down the road somewhere, we can make a joke about it. But, you know, there's nothing good about a political figure being assassinated. There's nothing good about innocent people going to a political rally and dying at it. That should be unacceptable anywhere. Political violence in the history of the world is the rule, not the exception. We're spoiled in America where we don't have a lot of violence with our politics. Now, we've had some glaring examples of political violence, some in recent memory. But we haven't had a lot of assassinations. Reagan attempted assassination. Gerald Ford before him had, oddly enough, usually it's a white male in their 20s that do these assassinations. Ford had two different women try to assassinate him, believe it or not. Of course, JFK. And then you go back to the other ones. You know, McKinley was shot, gut shot, died very, very slowly. And you can even go back to Lincoln. The thing about the assassination attempt, this is just bad. And anybody that couldn't start their comments with, I'm glad Donald Trump survived it. I'm glad he's relatively okay and unscathed. I know he was shot in the ear, but considering even an inch over what this could have been, that's pretty good. If you can't just start there and go, I'm glad Donald Trump didn't get shot, because that's horrible on a lot of levels for a lot of reasons. First of all, as a human being, then you've lost the plot on all this stuff. You need to step away from whatever your news intake is for a little bit and just get away from it. I want to say something else. I don't think it's been covered enough, the behavior of the crowd at this Trump rally. Trump rally crowds have taken a beating in the media, some justified for some behaviors and some of the things they chant along and cheer to. This Trump crowd, there wasn't a stampede. If you've never seen videos of mass panic, people just getting trampled to death, that could have easily happened here. It didn't. These people stayed where they were. There was screams, there was panic, there was people that were fearful, but there wasn't a panicked stampede. They didn't lose their minds. They didn't lose their bearing. And when Trump stood up, everybody's talking about him with the defiant moment, And yes, that is about as well as you can handle that. That's an inspiring thing. Somebody gets shot and gets up and immediately gets, you know, defiant about it. By the way, miss me with all the conspiracy theories. I ain't got time for that. That moment, though, for a crowd that had just experienced a shooting, instead of panicking, to break out in a cheer and a chant is a pretty remarkable thing. You don't have to like Trump. You don't have to like MAGA. You don't have to like people that normally go to a Trump rally politically. That crowd was impressive. That could have been a lot worse. They could have trampled people to death panicking. They stayed out of the way. Secret Service and law enforcement got Trump out of there. It was relatively orderly, the folks getting out of there, especially since, you know, obviously law enforcement and the Secret Service locked everything down and was letting people out very slowly as they kind of went through the crowd. But that could have been a lot worse if that crowd hadn't behaved themselves quite admirably. And I think we need to take a moment, especially folks on the other side that don't like Trump and don't like Trump rally crowds and have said a lot of probably sometimes justifiable, but a lot of broad brush, you know, hyperbole towards Trump rally crowds. And I've done it too. I've criticized the Trump rally crowds. That crowd was exceptional and deserves praise for how they handled that situation. They were giving aid to the people that were wounded, the gentleman that was killed. They were, now we know that the members of the crowd were situationally aware and were trying to point out a potential threat to law enforcement and the Secret Service. It fell on deaf ears or wasn't handled correctly, apparently. Let's talk about the Secret Service portion of this real quickly, and then we'll get to Donald Trump himself. This is an epic failure. I don't care how they call it. I don't care who you want to start with the blame, but there's a lot of blame and a lot of heads need to roll. It is inexcusable when there are only a handful of rooftops within line of sight of a speaking former president and current presidential candidate that is under Secret Service detail and has one of the more high alert Secret Service details in recent memory to not have a rooftop covered. The comments of the Secret Service director, the comments alone, she should be fired and or resign and or be removed, however you want to do it. That person does not need to have that office just based on the interview that I watched. That's inexcusable what she said. It was tone deaf. It was ignorant. It was high-handed. That person does not need to have that job, period, in the discussion. That's before you get to the shooting. And I understand the director does not take personal charge of each and every event, but there's something systematically wrong with what happened there, especially the more details we got. The Secret Service has a big, big problem. The Secret Service, and I've done some presidential support over the years a couple different times for things, there's concentric rings around the protectee. And there was multiple breakdowns here for this to happen the way it happened. A lot of people are to blame. There's not one person to blame. A lot of people are to blame. A lot of things went wrong. And a lot of heads need to roll and a lot of correction needs to be done. And really, really, really quickly. Not just for Donald Trump, but all the Secret Service protectorates and all the political people. Because a lot of local law enforcement, state police, people that guard governors and House of Delegate members and assemblymen and state senators and attorneys general, they take their lead off how the Secret Service does these things. So it's really important that we have some kind of a top-down, not just a blame game, you know, grandstanding congressional hearing. We need to have some real investigation, real change on how these things are handled, because this was a epic, epic, epic failure. And it was only because those counter snipers are so good at what they do that this wasn't a whole lot worse, that they got the shooter down after he only got off what we think is about 3 shots. That's pretty remarkable. It's good marksmanship by them. And they band-aided what was really an epic security failure and kept it from being a whole lot worse. Not just for Donald Trump, you had a mass crowd there and a guy with a whole lot of ammunition and the means to spread it around in a quick fashion if he hadn't been stopped quickly. This could have been a whole lot worse. Let's talk about the shooter for a second. A lot of people talking about motive. When Reagan was shot, nobody thought the motive of Hinckley shooting Reagan was because he was trying to impress Jodie Foster, the actress. I want you to keep that in mind watching all the coverage of the motive. We may never know what went through that guy's head before those 308 rounds from the counter sniper team when he did this. There's probably not a neat and clean answer coming. There almost never is with these killers, because they're not right in the head to be killers in the first place. So it's not going to make sense to us in a nice, clean fashion. Sometimes it does. Sometimes they're so, you know, psychopathic, they can sit down and write out, this is why I'm doing this and I want you to know. I don't think we're going to get that from this particular individual. So put that primary in your way of reading the news coverage on the motive and the shooter, and understand that we're probably never going to really know, which means everybody's going to project what they want him to be on top of it. So I've ignored a lot of the motive coverage because, one, I don't particularly care what his motive was. I do care if he was associated with somebody else. I do care if people helped and or abetted him. I do care if there was epic failures, like is what's being reported, that people saw him walking around and he wasn't stopped. I care about that. Do I particularly care about his motive? No. Am I glad he's dead? Yes. Do we need to know how he went about this for security reasons? Yes. But just chasing the motive is a little bit of a white elephant on these things. And I know people want to understand him, but most assassins, and this goes for mass shooters as well, although that the psychology of that's a little bit different, that these things are not going to make sense to the normal human mind because the human mind normally doesn't go there. People have already tried to jump on the bullying thing. That's kind of, you know, that's been the thing since Columbine. Well, they were bullied. Millions and millions of people are bullied without ever assassinating anybody or being mass shooters. We want neat and clean answers to things that there are not neat and clean answers to. So just be very careful with the motive. And lastly, I want to say something about Donald J. Trump. The politics of how this plays out, we don't know. We will see going forward. He will have some goodwill coming out of this, but the RNC is coming right after, which is hardcore politics. So I don't know that this is going to change anybody's mind one way or the other. But let's end right where we started with this, and let's just be honest and put our human hats on and take our political hats off. I'm really glad Donald Trump was not seriously harmed here, and I'm glad he wasn't assassinated. Assassination of a major political figure, especially a former president or a current president, is one of the worst things that can happen in a country. It's terrible. We never want to see that. We never want violence of any kind like that. And even though we live in a world that is politically violent and our own American history is full of political violence, we should be working really hard to keep the violence out of our politics. Now, I know the news coverage is all over the rhetoric. Y'all come both sides of this all day long because everybody's rhetoric has been out of control for a very long time. Trump says just really horrible stuff that's rhetorically. Biden said some stuff rhetorically that's really bad. You can get into the minutia of the really stupid thing like Biden saying bullseye, which he has since apologized for. It's dumb to go after Biden for that. Everybody knew exactly what he meant. It was dumb when people went after Sarah Palin over the Giffords thing. Everybody knows exactly what you're talking about. But if you are an elected official, yeah, you should probably be mindful of stuff like that. Just turn it down. You can say the exact same things you're saying without tipping it into violence or the really hardcore personal stuff that dehumanizes people and makes them less than. The problem is, we know from history and human behavior that politically people really respond to being, you know, those base level stuff of us versus them, they're evil, we're good, they're rabble, invasions, that kind of stuff. Evil, bad, fight them, existential threat. That stuff all works politically. It works in media. It gets clicks, it gets reads, it gets viewers. But there are that very small minority of the population who really are unhinged, and they take that an opening to go attack. So is the rhetoric responsible for this guy shooting Trump? I doubt it. Did it help? Nope. Is it something we can control and take a lesson from this, regardless of what the motive of the shooter is? Yep. Are people going to do it, especially Donald Trump and Joe Biden? For probably about 10 minutes. And then they'll go right back to hating each other, which is fine, which is the American way. But we need to settle those things on ballots and in debates and on arguments, and not by letting the shooters and the assassins of the world decide things and take them out of the people's hands. I'm very glad Donald Trump survived this assassination attempt. Let's find out why it happened. Let's fix the security lapses. Let's all be a little bit better. Taking all of the above approach to this and hope this never happens again. Understanding that eventually there's some whack job out there. It's going to happen again. And maybe we'll be a little more prepared because we can remember what it felt like to be right on the abyss of something really ugly happening in Butler, Pennsylvania. More Hurtel right after this. Thank you. Welcome back to Herd Tell. Let's talk about the Republican National Convention for just a second. I've been kind of struck watching parts of it. I haven't watched every single speech. I've hit the highlights of it. I watched the Nikki Haley speech because I wanted to see how she would handle that. I've watched some of the other stuff, the high points especially. There was a lot of talk since the J.D. Vance pick was announced online, the commentators, the talking heads, that J.D. Vance is picked because, oh, he's going to continue Trump's legacy after Trump. Because remember, if Trump wins, he's a lame duck president immediately. So is Joe Biden. He can't run again. He may try. We'll see. But Trump can't run again after this. It'll be his second term. So the line I've seen a lot, especially on the right, especially in conservative and Republican circles and Trump circles, is, well, J.D. Vance is young because, you know, he's not even 40 yet. He's going to take the legacy of Trump into the future. No, he's not. Trump's not going to have a legacy per se. He's not going to have a political movement per se that goes past him. Now, just listen to what I'm saying here, because this will probably upset some of the Trump supporters, and that's fine. And some people that are against Trump probably aren't going to particularly believe this either. There's no such thing as Trumpism without Donald Trump. Oh, there's elements of it, but people are like, well, Trumpism is a populist movement. Well, not really when you dig into it. It has populist overtones, its undergirdings, and it's probably the most similar. Populism is kind of the term that fits it the best, but it doesn't fit it perfectly because, again, Trumpism only works with Donald Trump. What Donald Trump thinks and does and says becomes the platform. Donald Trump is what this all revolves around. Everybody has to approve or disapprove of Donald Trump. Donald Trump has become a singularity in the Republican Party. He's completely taken it over. Anybody that's against Donald Trump isn't on the platform, isn't getting speaking slots, isn't talking about it. You're not even getting the Ted Cruz very limp vote your conscience stuff this time. Ted Cruz came out and just, you know, did his little dance for the man who took his political soul out of him and wore it as a hat and demands Ted Cruz tell him how pretty his hat is every time he sees them. Donald Trump broke every politician that he ran against in 2016. Just look at how subservient they are to him. There is no Trumpism without Donald Trump. And once Donald Trump passes off the scene, this isn't going to hold together. And watching this RNC where they're talking unity, they're projecting unity, they're talking about, you know, how they're one big happy party family. The Nikki Haley part was, you know, the kind of the king piece of that. And DeSantis spoke right after her, another king piece of that, because he'll obviously be running for another office, whether it's another run of president or for senator or whatever the case may be coming up. We will see. But Trumpism isn't going to survive not having Donald Trump, because here's the thing. A political party, even one that's dominated by a cult of personality like Donald Trump, is still a coalition. There's still coalitions and factions inside of the Republican Party. They're all underneath the banner of Trump right now, but they still don't all get along. The J.D. Vance pick we talked about earlier in this episode. J.D. Vance's faction, the tech bro edgelord oligarchs, who, you know, they're very not ideologically aligned with the GOP, but they just see the GOP as the best way for them to get power and to get what they want and to get some control in government for the kind of businesses they want to run. That faction doesn't fit at all with traditional conservatism. Now, traditional conservatism is completely gone from the Republican Party and laying broken at the feet of Donald Trump. But after Trump, those folks are going to want to try to maybe get a little piece of their stuff back. Some of the moderates might try to get back. Some of the previous folks, you know, the Romney, Bush, McCain, those kind of folks that have been run out of the party, they may try to get back into the party and get into the good graces and get some power. There's all kinds of other groups within the GOP, but the point is, they've all just kind of molded themselves to please Donald Trump and run under Donald Trump and to please Donald Trump voters. But once Donald Trump's gone, that coalition is not a natural coalition. It is only held together because Donald Trump wins elections. And when Donald Trump didn't win an election in 2020, you saw some fraying. Now that it looks like he has probably the odds-on favorite to win the 2024 election, there's a lot of peace and happy, shining people, and everybody's holding hands. But as soon as Donald Trump is elected, the 2028 election is going to kick off, because he's going to be a lame duck president, and he's going to have a lot of headwinds And we'll have to see what the makeup of Congress is and see if he has the trifecta or not. But even if he does, there's going to be a lot of pushback, and all that coalition is going to have a hard time holding together. And once Donald Trump passes off the scene, it won't hold together at all, because those people cannot get along with each other. It's only the personality and the popularity with the base of Donald Trump that's holding this whole thing together. J.D. Vance is not very similar to Donald Trump. Oh, I know they say the same things, and I know on, you know, Twitter and social media and in interviews they have some similarities, but they're very, very different people. J.D. Vance is very smart. He's very ambitious. He's very, very craven. He's way more calculating than Trump is. Trump has instincts from being a reality TV star, from being a ultimate salesman of himself, of being himself the brand that he was before he got into politics. Those kind of instincts have served him well in politics. J.D. Vance is a lot more calculated. He's also more abrasive. J.D. Vance doesn't appeal to the same groups of people that Trump does, even as he espouses Trump and Trumpism now as the running mate and his conversion to it. There's not going to be a Trump legacy carried on. There's going to be something after Trump in the GOP. And that something after the Trump in the GOP is going to take large chunks of what worked for Trumpism, mold it to whatever it is that they bring to the table, and then they're going to take over. Now, which one of these factions is that going to be? Is it going to be the J.D. Vance, you know, Silicon Valley, big money, tech bro faction? Are they going to be supreme? I don't know. Are they going to appeal to a whole lot of people? We'll see. Is it going to be more of a traditional politician, like the endless lists of senators and members of Congress who paraded across the RNC? Is one of them going to elevate? You saw Byron Donalds in the box with Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. That was not accidental. You know, those kind of people, are they going to be elevated? Are they going to be able to take control of the party? And then you have the bomb throwers, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Matt Gaetzes, who probably are safe in their congressional seats for as long as they want to be there, but they've already demonstrated they'll fight about anybody other than Donald Trump himself. What kind of role will those kind of people that they appeal to in the Republican Party? The coalition is always important. Biden won the presidency because he held together the traditional coalition of the Democratic Party, plus the I'm not going to vote for Trump folks no matter what, and he won the election. That coalition is fraying. We talk about the debate being bad. We talk about Biden's age and all that. What you're really seeing is the people who just joined that coalition to get rid of Trump isn't sticking around now that Biden is weakening. Anytime you're analyzing an election, you always got to start with the coalitions. That's why I never bought Nikki Haley as a viable candidate. I asked on, you can go look this up on Twitter. I don't delete my tweets. I have asked it for years and it proved out to be exactly true. I said, what is her coalition? Nikki Haley, the idea on paper is viable, but she's never had a viable coalition. Who was her coalition on a ticket when Donald Trump was running? She's not Trumpy enough for the Trumpy people. She's not really neocon enough for the neocons, even though I don't like the term neocon, but for lack of a better way to explain it. She was in no man's land, coalition-wise, and that's why it didn't work. Same thing for a lot of these other people. Ted Cruz, what was his coalition once he lost all the... His plan was all the evangelicals in 2016 were going to flock to him. Remember, he announced at Liberty University. Of course, he didn't know that the then president of Liberty University was already in the bag for Trump, and Trump was going to endorse Trump just weeks later, and that whole thing got shot to hell. Coalitions matter. And by the way, our Democratic friends are going to have the same problem when Biden passes off the scene, either whether he gets reelected or not. The Democratic Party is about to go through some things. I do media outside of just the conservative circles. I've been on Young Turks. I do regular traditional media. I do liberal media. I talk to all sorts of progressives. I have lots of progressive friends. I work with progressive outlets. I write commentary for progressive outlets. I don't worry about things like that because I just say what I want to say. And if you want to run it, fine. And if you don't, fine too, no problem. But one of the reasons I do that is to keep the perception, and I've talked about this on Progressive, I talked about this on Young Turks with Rashad Ritchie's show, and he agreed with me. The Democratic Party is about to go through the same problem because they don't have anybody that's going to hold that old coalition together. They're going to have to form a new coalition, and does that coalition match the national electorate? what Trump is putting together today for this particular election might win this election. He might win the Electoral College. It may be just enough against a weak Joe Biden. Remember, too, when we're talking about these coalitions, when you look at these elections, Trump won by about 80,000 votes in about three or four states. Biden won based off about 44,000 votes in about four key swing states. These coalitions really matter when you get into those swing states to win the Electoral College to become the president of the United States. And then when they really matter is when you're talking about trying to get the House of Representatives or the Senate, although the Senate's a little more stodgy because you only have a third of them up at all time, but the whole House is up every 2 years. If you really want to turn down the noise on election stuff, and when they're hyping this legacy of Trumpism or legacy of Biden, remember, not too long ago, we were talking about the legacy of Barack Obama, who had two of the more impressive electoral wins ever and had almost no electoral legacy after that because the party had to deal with the Trump era, and it became basically the anti-Trump party. That's just the way these things work. So don't get tied up on this stuff very often. The Bush legacy? George W. Bush isn't even invited to the RNCs anymore. Don't get hung up on legacies, because they're not really going to be a Trumpism without Trump. And when you're analyzing this stuff, always look at those coalitions first, because they tell you how viable and powerful these people really are. Biden's having a hard time holding his coalition together. Donald Trump looks like he's got the winning formula to keep his coalition together. And a coalition that is held together against a coalition that's falling apart is one of those things that tends to dissuade the undecideds in the middle, although I don't think there's very many undecideds in this. I think the Biden people may just stay home. We will see. So that's the RNC. Is Vance going to... Somebody on Twitter challenged me on it. I said, hey, bookmark it. J.D. Vance cannot carry the Trump legacy because there's not going to be one. He'll take part of it and try to spin it into something else. But there is no Trumpism without Trump. Just go ahead and figure that out now, and you'll be way ahead of the headlines later. More Herd Tell right after this. Hi, welcome back to Herd Tell. Okay, a lot of ugly stuff out there today. Let's end on a good note, as we always try to do when we have the time to do so. John Allman Hemingway, who was an RAF officer during the Battle of Britain, is thought to be the last verified living survivor who fought in the Battle of Britain, last airman in the few, as Winston Churchill called them, that so many owed so much to. As I record this on July the 17th, it is his birthday. He is 105 years old. Group captain, retired, of course, Hemingway, fought at the Battle of Dunkirk, the Battle of Britain. He flew air cover over the invasion of Italy and the invasion of Normandy. He served throughout the entire war and stayed in the RAF for a while after the World War II as well. He didn't retire from the military fully until 1969. He was also a staff officer in NATO. Afterwards, he was a wing commander. He served in the Air Ministry, had a long and distinguished career. Probably more important to him, though, he was happily married and had three children, has quite a few grandchildren. He is verified as the last surviving airman of the Battle of Britain since William Clark died on the 7th of May in 2020. He is an Irishman. He's living in a nursing home, but is said to be doing relatively well for his very advanced age, and as recently as last year participated in some remembrances. There's a great video online from 2003 where he is reunited with the Spitfire that he flew for most of World War II. It's a very touching video. You can watch that at some point. He currently resides in a nursing facility in Dublin. But Group Captain Hemingway, one of the very last of a very special breed of men who we all owe a very great debt to, Happy birthday, good sir, 105 years old. That's a heck of a run for a very, very legendary man. Look at that legend putting in his work. God bless you, sir, and thank you for your service. And that'll do it for Heard Tell. This is a very different episode. I will be traveling and will be off. We actually have a couple pre-recorded episodes I'll be putting out later this week and going into next week because I knew I'd be off and traveling and all the craziness involved in the wedding. So I will duck in as I can. Look for those episodes coming up. We got a great one with our friend Benjamin Ianian where we just talk about a lot of issues from a new book he wrote. That'll be coming out soon. Also, we now have the entirety of the Heard Tell archive in the podcast tab of YouTube. That's a special tab in YouTube. A lot of people listen to podcasts on YouTube. They have put together now where you can just have the straight RSS feed right into your YouTube subscription. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you not only have access to all the videos, but you have access to all 700 plus episodes of the Heard Tell podcast, all the specials, everything. That has all been migrated over. We had a little bit of a problem because YouTube gave us a couple strikes for episodes that have been up for years for reasons that nobody can explain. We've got that all cleared up with them now. All those episodes are uploaded. iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Speaker, however you are listening to this podcast, anywhere in the world, please leave a comment. Please make sure you follow on all those platforms. That's really important. It helps us know where you are. It helps the platforms know that we are worth carrying and promoting. If you could leave a comment and a rating, that would be great. We'd really appreciate that. We don't advertise outside of our own social media, so it's all word of mouth, and we keep growing, and we keep getting from strength to strength, and it's all because of you. We'll keep doing it as long as you keep listening. So wherever you are, across the street or around the world, we hope you are well. We hope you are well fed. And we'll talk to you again soon for more Heard Tell. All the music on Heard Tell is provided under a Creative Content license from MonsterCat.com. Somos la máquina.